Last night, Celtic beat a very poor Aberdeen team with an enormous goalkeeper, 3-0. And then last night was the deadline for European transfer window. And then today at 5 o'clock is the domestic deadline. So we're on to do a podcast about the game and the transfer window. I'm joined by Stephen and Andrew. So first of all, Andrew, what did you think of the game last night?
It was enjoyable. It's great. And you pinch yourself because we're not so far away from last season and all the kind of ignominy of actually watching Celtic. Ultimately, it came good, but just to watch a team that looks recognisably Celtic from my lifetime. There can be flawed in terms of like the defensive line or like in terms of, although last night Aberdeen offered nothing, but they've got that zeal, they've got that impetus, they've got that attacking impetus. You think they're going to score goals. They do score goals. It's like I was saying to my brother, you know, it's like the old gold prospector. There's goals in that darn team, you know, like, and that's the joy of it. And it's funny now, like reading social media, you could tell so many people went along and enjoyed their night. It's because it's still early in the season, and that was the kind of first kind of dodgy one in terms of that torrential rain and whatever. But people still made their way, still a right good crowd, and people are enjoying watching Celtic again. And that was the main takeaway for me. Celtic are enjoyable to watch again, and that's long may it continue.
Stephen?
Yeah, it was a good watch. It was a very professional performance. It was like efficient. Game was done at halftime. You know, as you said earlier, it's a poor Aberdeen side. Like they were a poor side, and they seem to have got poorer. You know, so you know, I don't know what's going to happen with them. I saw bits of them on Sunday against the other mob, and they weren't great. I watched them against Hearts. I don't know how they won that game. They absolutely mugged Hearts at the end of that game. Hearts played them off the pitch. So I think they'll struggle. We look like we've got goals. Said earlier in the season, Andrew, would just like to say it now, that Duran will score more than who?
You did. I will confirm that.
I wasn't thinking that just because he was fit. There's just something about Duran is a very good footballer. He's got something about he lights up the pitch. He always looks dangerous when he's got the ball, even when he's, you know, off the ball. He's a very good player. Hopefully we keep a hold of him. If you look, he's moved everywhere after a year. So if we get him for 2 years, then we're doing better than his last two teams. So hopefully that's, you know, we'll get, and I think we will hopefully get that. We should get out of him. But yeah, the team looked good. Second half was, we didn't really need to do anything. You know, I texted last night. I would have brought Murray on just to get some game time for him, because Carter Vickers was on a booking. The big striker that Olesanya or Olesoma, whatever, was kind of bouncing him, and you could see him getting dragged into some of that dafty referee that we had as well. That, oof. You know, what you don't want is Carter Vickers getting a red. You know, so that's what I would maybe have given Murray some game time in a game that actually, if he does make a mistake, it doesn't matter. But other than that, I thought Colby Donovan was great again. I love a player that plays with his socks around his ankles. Always have, always will. There's just something about it. And he's the guy that we look and say, well, do we need to go out and bring in players, when actually bringing in players might block this kid? For example, it's a shame we don't have another two or three Colby Donovans around the pitch that you know, that we can push on, but that's maybe for later on in the chat. But yeah, no, I thought it was a good performance. A skoosh, as they would say, you know.
And Andrew, what did you think of the players that came on that we've not seen yet? So obviously Sorensen, Mueku, I think is how you pronounce his name, Chelsea boy, Hassan played again longer. I did think, watching Hassan, Martin O'Neill will not be enjoying him doing those fancy flicks. Martin will beat them out of him.
But that's what you want, you know. Like, because Martin O'Neill, he is a kind of traditionalist, so he does love the kind of Tanner ball players, as we used to call them. How old do I sound, man? I turned 59 this week, so I am old. There's no getting away from it. But he blew out after about 50 odd minutes, and you could tell. I saw him looking over at the bench thinking, I've done my bit. And Anil's thinking, no, you need to get fitter. So he kept him on. Like, he didn't make him first change. Did you notice that? Because I think people were surprised. He wasn't first change. There was our good friends at the Huddle Breakdown. They were saying in his first game that he's packing passing scores, which means how many players you pass.
Yeah.
It was something astronomical compared to other wingers, Jota.
Ever or something, yeah.
Yeah, even Jota, he's best. So he looks a good signing. Do you know what I loved? And this is a bit random and it's a bit typical me. Did any of you watch the Oxes? I hate nicknames normally, right? But I actually call Oxlade Chamberlain the Ox because I don't know. I just like it. I don't know why. It's pathetic. But did anybody watch the Oxes post-match on Celtic TV? Do you know what was very... I loved it, right? I loved it for many reasons. But you know why? One of the reasons I loved it, he talked about the squad and he said, see when we're getting James E. Forrest, he said, when he can come on and give us performances like that, because people are forgetting, he's looked excellent. See, Forrest was 22, and a guy you just signed and you were just bedding him into the team, people go like, oh, you've got a player there. So he's still making a contribution. And actually, during the game, it was very noticeable. He flipped one over to, was it Mavuka we're calling him? Is that not the guy that went to...
That was the guy last year. Shim Fane. Shim, big Shim up front.
Mavuka. He beat a man, Forrest, James, and he flipped over, and it was Mavuka. Jeez, is this a new one for me? He stumbled over. and he didn't quite get to it, right? It was a great opportunity. He didn't quite get to it. But you could tell he was thinking, this guy's good. This guy they brought in's good. And he looked over at him, and he was clapping him. It was very notable. I'll tell you, the other guy who was terrific last night and he seems to have got a new lease of life is Yang. But then this is what happens if you build a squad and you've got players thinking, there's other guys they can bring on. There's others. And he's thinking, I'm going to the Asia Games in 2 weeks. By the time I come back, maybe Jota's on the bench or whatever, you know. So, you know, I might not get my place back when I'm coming back. So I need to give them something to remember me by before I'm away for 3 weeks or so. It's like, you've talked about this before, Brian, but you know, it's like, the rising tide lifts all the boats.
Mm-hmm.
If you bring in players, if you make your squad stronger, if those players look as if they've got something to offer, then everybody else thinks, I have to up my game. Because if you think about last season, it was like, you had to flog the same players even though they weren't playing well enough because there was no one else. You know, during the really lean periods, it wasn't as if the team changed much. It was, you just had to hope that people somehow kind of found their way into better form. Whereas now, if it's not quite happening for you, somebody else can come in. I mean, I thought Sorensen looked like a guy who nothing much has been coming right for him. The striker, he looked good, although you noticed he wasn't the quickest. And you think, there's always a reason why these guys, I know he's only 18, 19, but 18, 19 year olds, if you're the absolute top of the tree, then you're in and around your first team at any club. So there's maybe that is the reason why that he's scoring all these goals for the Chelsea B team and he's not been utilised.
Just to give you a heads up, Chelsea think he's a 50, 60 million pound player in about 2 years' time.
Aye, but that almost doesn't say too much.
Yeah, well, that's
that
just the Aston Villa when they do the money laundering thing.
Yeah. So it's too early. I'm encouraged by my early viewings of Hassan. I'm making no judgment. Sorensen. Bauer come on and look quite busy, but I was pleased that the players that pleased me were Donovan, were Yang. I thought Callum McGregor was excellent last night, but people just, they've decided he's on his way out, he's on his way down. I just thought he managed it wonderfully well. Maybe it's easy because it was such a piss poor opposition, but there's so many players look as if they're in decent nick. And I know I heard you on the podcast last week talking about the Ox and saying he's so slow. I think he's actually gained about half a yard this season because he's playing more. He's obviously, did you see Sean Maloney saying he's trained more than anybody else across the summer?
Don't get me wrong. He's not the pace that I think we need in the middle of the park. But I think what helps him is he's got really great feet. So his lack of burst of pace is disguised by the fact that he's got great feet and can get out of a situation with his feet.
Yeah. Sometimes pace hides the other deficiencies, doesn't it? Don't know.
But, there's reasons to be. It's so annoying last Tuesday, and I know we don't want to keep harping on about it, but I still think that was it wasn't a board failure, and this isn't me trying to let the board away with it, but it was a players and management failure for me, and I said that about the last two Champions League exits. You know, as I said to you in the chat, when it's icy, i.e. the board...
Yeah, your Confucius statement.
This is my Confucius statement. See if anybody gets it. I thought it was all right. When it's icy, you're more likely to slip, right? But every time you slip when it's icy, it's not always down to it being icy. You know, when you've got this board...
Maybe you're drunk.
I've done that. And I'll tell you, I've fallen many a time. I remember waking up. Bizarrely, we were talking off air about Neil Lennon. Neil Lennon once pulled me into a taxi because he said I was too drunk. Neil Lennon. I got out the other side of the taxi. You know, it was like, you know, like the monkeys. Like, I got out the other side of the taxi and I went back in another door that he wasn't there. He saw me again because, you know what? Why he chucked me out? Because I kept going on about his pal wearing a rug. Do you know the carpet fitter? Do you fit that carpet in your head? What was he called again? The electrician guy.
Yeah, that became a coach. Highly professional recruitment setup that we have at Celtic.
The Leicester, he knew him for Leicester. He was a nice enough.
Gary Parker?
Gary Parker
was the scout guy.
So I was...
It played with Lennon at Leicester.
He was a drinking buddy from when Alan Thompson kind of...
Yeah, I'm sure
Gary
Parker was the guy that used to come and watch all the Championship players.
Gary Parker?
So he used to be down... You'd see him down at Cardiff City because he came down here. He came down and watched Shane Long and I think maybe Joe Ledley as well was playing for City at the time, maybe. Shane Long was the guy I always wanted Celtic to sign. I always thought we should have signed him for years.
Well, there was a couple of times they seemed to come close, but I was going on about Gary Parker's setup. It's no wigs these days, it's transplants for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he was getting really, really annoyed at me because I was pished. So once I got back out the other side of the taxi, you know, monkey style, and went round the other back door, when I come back in, he kind of grabbed me and pulled me into a taxi. But when I got out that taxi, right, because I went to the wrong street, I fell into a bush, and then I met 2 hours later, like I woke up in this bush.
You know?
It was nuts. So, and it was icy. That's what I remember. It was icy as well. Sorry.
Why are you talking about it? Yeah.
Oh my days.
Anyway, so I think those the last two Champions League fails, but that doesn't. I'm not absolving the board, and I don't think we've got a great strategy. And I think I'd love it all to be different, but you can still have football failures that are down to the players and the management. Sorry, that's my rant over them. Okay. Apologise.
No, it gets back to the thing I keep saying. Two things can be true at the same time. It can be true that the board should have provided more resources to the manager prior to the Champions League playoff. And it can also be true that regardless of whether the board did that or not, 4-0 up with 60 minutes to go, that squad and coaching staff should have got us through to Champions League football. Those two things can both be true at the same time.
You know one of the mistakes he made? Sorry, I keep harping on about it. He should have brought on Forrest. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say that.
I don't understand why didn't he bring on Forrest.
Yeah. But that's a different discussion. Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of mistakes made.
But yeah, you don't forget or forgive those Champions League ones. They live with you. They stew with you. There's certain games, because as I say, my boy was saying that's the worst ever for me, Dad. And he could probably still, like, you could, when you still, it still gets you in the pit of your stomach. It just seems so avoidable. Both this year and last year seemed so avoidable.
Which gets me on to talking about the squad. And, you know, so people get, I'll talk through all the positions, people, but that game in particular demonstrated to me why I don't think Sinisalo's the number one. And I just think the fourth goal in particular, a top quality goalkeeper. Sinisalo parries shots. So when people shoot, he saves them, makes a good save, but he just parries it, which means it goes straight back out. You know, Motherwell's equaliser at Fir Park, parries it straight out. The last fourth goal, I think a top quality goalkeeper pushes that over the bar or pushes it to the side, out. You push it out. The danger area is the area immediately in front of the width of the goal. So if you're not going to hold it, which most modern goalkeepers don't, your job is to push it away. When the ball comes in, you're pushing it away. So that fourth goal, and I know it's hard, and that's the difference between a top goalkeeper and a good goalkeeper. A top goalkeeper pushes that one over the bar or pushes it out to the side. He parries it, so it drops straight down. And I know there's multiple faults there. There's Dean Murray's playing right back, and he shouldn't be playing right back. So because he's playing right back, he takes up a centre-half's position instead of a right-back's position. McCowan runs like me, running from the train on a, you know, the wrong way up a platform. Luke McCowan's got no pace, so he can't keep up with the guy who puts the cross in. Cross comes in. Guy gets a free header, some trustee standing looking at him. Guy gets a free header in. And then when Sinisalo parries it out, the guy who scores it's being marked by Tonetke, but he just steps off Tonetke and puts it in the back of the net. So there are the management, Dean Murray, Luke McCowan, trustee, Sinisalo, fought that goal. However, if I'm picking and looking at each one, I'm looking at that going, that to me is an example of why I think Sinisalo's a good goalkeeper, but we should be getting better.
By the way, I heard you saying this in the podcast last week, and I couldn't believe it. Sorry, I'm not meaning to keep cutting in on you, but I couldn't believe it because did you listen to Schmeichel, analyst?
No. I put the sound down when I'm watching it.
Do you know what Schmeichel was saying? He said, "I am so disappointed for Sinny," I think I was calling or something, wasn't he, Stephen? He said because that was an absolutely magnificent save. The very fact
it was, he kept out.
At all, so I don't understand why you're seeing this as a stick to beat him
not
with.
Just me.
Ironically, that wasn't the goal I'd have picked him up for. I'd have picked him up for all the other ones, the long range ones. I thought, and it's a very good point. If you look at our great European campaigns, in Barcelona, the Great Wall, La Grande, you know, Fraser Forster, Manchester United. You know, they still got Guinness in the roof of the pub in Cardiff from when Boric saved the penalty. Boric's penalty save was as important as Nakamura's free kick because it was both together that got us into next round. But we had a really good goalie. Somebody talked about it last week, was at the Art Media game, Marshall. Wasn't at fault for any of the five goals, but he never looked like saving any of the five. And that's what I felt like last week. I think if we'd had a really good goalkeeper, we might only concede three or four in the 90 minutes and we might actually get lucky and get through. But, you know, he did make a great save, but you're right, a really good goalie, he's got bigger hands on it. He's got better hands on it, like, you know, that, as they say.
Yeah.
And that's, but then you could go all the way back and say, why have we not got a better goalie? Well, whose fault is that? So that, you know, that's comes back to the ice, Andrew. You know, do we fall over on the ice because we didn't have a good goalkeeper, for example? You know, so
yeah,
that's really confusing people now. Like, they're thinking, what the fuck are you going on about? Goalkeepers
get rubber gloves so he can crawl along at least. He's no slipper.
We all
at
had
all,
those Sunday cut ones for Christmas, the wee sticky bits on them. I know Brian did as he was a goalie as well.
Me too. I was a goalie as well.
So on the squad itself, Stephen, I suppose it depends where your starting point is, I think. for how you assess this window and how you assess the squad. So my starting point is the last four windows have been crap. Therefore, anything above crap is an improvement. And I suppose my attitude is we have a culture within the club of buying cheap, wanting to buy cheap. And one of my criticisms was always hedging our bets. Under Ange, we bought four £2 million midfielders instead of one £8 million midfielder, which is what we really needed. But we like to hedge our bet and spread it and do all that. We buy players late, and the last few windows have been shit. So based on all of that, looking at it in the round, and then, so my expectations were low, and that concept of changing, so I'm looking at this window as a positive, because one part of our, you know, you don't change our culture overnight, and one part of our transfer culture has changed in this window. Because we've gone and bought who? For 12 million. We've gone and bought Bauer for 6 million. We've gone and bought Hassan for 6 million. We've gone and bought Duran for 5, 6 million. We've got a loan with an option to buy on Sorensen at that sort of price level. My positivity is, instead of hedging our bets and spreading our cash, we've bought quality and we've moved a tier up in terms of what we spend. So from that perspective, I'm trying to take the positives of it. As I say, you don't change culture in a day. So there's one part of what we've done has changed. And if they see a success from that, the team plays well, the team does well in Europe, we win trophies, that might give them the confidence in the new recruitment team to invest a bit more in that recruitment team in January and a bit more in that recruitment team next summer. And these incremental steps, we see positive progress. That's my trying to look with a positive
Anglossian view.
Yeah.
Am I being overly optimistic, Stephen?
Yeah, but you could say I'm completely the opposite. But that's why you need debate. But if you look back at the window when we brought in Trusty, Engels and Ida, you can say those were examples of spending a bit more, getting players in. And actually the success we got with those three players, I know some people still don't rate Engels, but the success we got with those three players, the performances you got in the Champions League, that, you know, getting through the Champions League, those three players didn't take us through a qualifying campaign, so it's different. We were straight into the group at that point. But I would have thought that last summer, the recruitment people had earned the right to get more players like that. But I don't know who the recruitment people were that identified Engels, Ida and Trusty, because it was still an element of last-minute shopping with them as well. Absolutely, look, we went out and bought better players, so that's a positive. No, I still think we could have got them in earlier. I think if Hassan had been a month fitter, he might have made a difference in the game last week. If we'd had an actual six in, you know, that seems to be the position that we really miss in Europe. I think two more players, we win that game last week, or we see that game out. You can go on to the, you know, the Engels mistake and the brain fart that led to it and whose fault that was. And, you know, you see some analysis online that showed like how badly McGregor played, but then they kind of rewound and that said, okay, maybe they concentrated on McGregor because he was covering for everybody else. It was an all-round bad performance by everybody in the end. Is this going to lead to a change? I guess we will see in January and we will see next summer. And we will see how prepped we are for next year's Champions League qualifiers. I can hear an echo there. So yeah, that's my disagreement.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm more Stephen than you, Brian, I must say. Because they signed 10 players in that window. I take it they feel as if they needed to sign those 10 players. Five of those players came in the last 24 hours before the European deadline. So isn't that that, and four of those, sorry, it was six, was it six in the last 24 hours and five of them were loans? Yeah, is that right, Ryan?
There was two Chelsea loans, Wolves loan, the Sorensen loan.
Sorensen.
And
I'm not counting Sorensen as a loan.
But he's a loan to buy, so that's a different loan.
He's a loan with an option to buy.
Loans I'm kind of okay with, because they're the ones you get late in the window. I'm kind of okay with those.
Yeah, I can accept that. And in fairness to them, they identify.
No, do we develop Chelsea's youngsters ahead of developing our own? I think the young guy scored a hat trick last week for one of the youth teams, who's only 17, but does Shim block him from getting a run in the team? No, he's probably not going to get a run in the team anyway, but you know, that's again a thing you have to worry about with those. You know, it could be that we had Paddy Roberts on loan, but we got him for two seasons, didn't we? Was it two and a bit, actually? And he was
two and a half.
But you know, Paddy Roberts kind of seemed like he was our player because we had him on loan for that long. Mm. So if we get these guys for another season, they're probably the kind of players that you're not keeping for more than 2 years anyway. So that's that, you know, and certainly the young striker, when he came on last night, I thought he looked very good. He looked at the level that he can play, certainly in Scotland, and will fit in and will take 20 minutes in games here and there. So I'm kind of okay with those ones. Again, Sorensen, I agree, Brian, that's a good idea. Was he on the list before the last week, or did he come up on the list, or was it like this guy suddenly? Do you know what I mean? That's where the list maybe needs to be. And look, if we'd ended up with him and Giannitis, and they're both good players, then you've got, you know, maybe you said, you know, Callum McGregor this time next year is going to be a year older. Are you doing a bit of future-proofing by getting two good players in instead of just one? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, where is the CDM, but? That was the black hole in the middle of the entire transfer window for Celtic. I think you look at it, the profiles are good. Duran, and I know if he's speaking to you, Brian, I know they identified him a long time ago. And maybe that's good. It looks like good business to me. Hassan, they identified him a long time ago. They weren't buying a World Cup player. They were interested in him before that. We know that they were after who for long enough. So they had targets that they trapped. So that's something that's maybe the more positive thing. They had targets and they went and they got them. Sometimes they had to pay top dollar. They had to pay top dollar for who, but they didn't blanch at paying the absolute kind of optimum that Bodo Glimt would think they could get for who I think now, if Celtic stick to, and it was quite noticeable last night that when they set up and Sinisalo was kicking long the other time, and you saw the setup because of where I sit in the main stand, you could see it was very much a 4-2-3-1. Now if Celtic stick to that 4-2-3-1, and I think what Duran has done in the last couple of games, you say you don't play this guy out wide. You don't play him out wide just to accommodate him. It's not actually to accommodate him. It's to accommodate who? And you might need to say to yourself, just as you had Adam Ida as a £9 million striker on the bench, the reality is, if Duran keeps up this form, and say you've got Jota coming back, or Yang in his current form, and Hassan grows and grows, then it's one or t'other. And it might well be the guy that you spent double the money on the other guy who has to kind of content himself with a place on the bench often.
I was going to say that's like when it was under Ange, when you had that front three and you could take off Kyogo and bring on Giakoumakis, you could take off Maeda and bring on Abada, you had, you know, Jota, we had four, you know, you had the front three that ended the game was as good as the front three that started it. I think we're near that situation now, whereas last year, that was a problem. We were finishing games with teams that shouldn't have been, you know, weren't good enough for Celtic. You know, some of the players on the finishing 11 in a number of games last year just weren't good enough. You know, it was when we got towards that run in when you could have Iheanacho coming on, like, you know, he made a difference, didn't he, when he couldn't play for a full game, but for half an hour, actually, he was a really good guy to bring on for half an hour. I think we've got guys now that we can bring on for half an hour. Actually, you could start, you bench Duran on Saturday and start who, and we would still expect to perform at the same level. I wouldn't bench Duran, but you could. You know, you could rest him, you could give him, you know, a day off if we're playing in the cup. That's what you need to get. We need to not run all our players into the ground. Remember the thing a couple of years ago when McGregor had played most minutes of any players in Europe, and we wore that as a badge of honour? That's not a good thing, because you're running him into the ground. That's why Kieran Tierney went to Arsenal and was knackered, because we ran him into the ground. You need to manage players and give them a rest. You know, top-level players. And if you look at all the big teams, Man City's, your PSG's, Bayern, there's guys there getting rested all the time, isn't there? You know, I think PSG had a guy, he played more games in the 20 games in the Champions League than he had in the French League. I can't remember who it was, but there was someone.
Dembele. It was Dembele, yeah. Wasn't it?
You know, but that's what, I'm not saying we can do that, but like, yeah, let's not run them into the ground. And I think that's what the squad, that's what the 10 new players that have come in all look like they're good enough. You know, okay, we haven't seen the Chelsea left-back yet, the youngster, but you've got to assume he's going to be of a level. Like, you know, it's like when we brought in Bailly from Barcelona. He was certainly good enough. You know, he's playing in Italy now in Serie A. He's going to be playing in Champions League. He was good enough for Celtic. We just never really made the most of him, I don't think. So we'll see. But, you know, the one I'm excited about is the PSV kid, Vandenberg. Actually, I don't know why, but it's the profile there is.
I know what you mean. He does seem like a kind of an Engels replacement. His profile kind of stacks up to Engels, like in terms of he gets about the pitch, he's physical, he's quick. Yeah, he could be. The good thing is, if you've got a strong enough squad, and the thing about it is, whatever's happened and however they've got there, I think this Celtic squad, I feel better about this squad than have for any since the Ange era.
Well, I was going to go through the squad, Andrew. So if we look at the front, you've got Hassan Forrest on the right in terms of options for the manager, and Duran can play there if he needs it. You've got Yang Tenecki, but within about a month's time, you've got Jota. Now, sod's law, Jota's going to come back just as the pitches start to go downhill, but, you know, no idea, right? We just need to hope and see for them. But in theory, you've got Yang, Jota, Tenecki left. You've got Forrest, Hassan, Duran, if you need it right. And then you've got Hu, Mueta, and Duran in the middle. I mean, that section there for
Callum
me.
Callum Osmond as well.
Well, Callum Osmond as well. And one thing you touched on, Stephen, about the, you know, I was reading people online, like you were commenting about the young lad that's 17 that's been scoring goals for the B team, and he's scored a hat-trick against Strenar, and here he are, his route's been blocked with the Chelsea boy. I don't know, and this might not be the case, but when the Chelsea boy came on and he looked like a big grown-up man, I did think to myself, well, maybe our 17-year-old is nowhere near that level of physicality.
Yeah.
Or maybe they've looked at it and thought, if you then become part of the first team squad, you're not playing, bar once in a blue moon. We would much rather you play for the B team and we use the cooperation agreement and you go out on loan to people. We would rather you play somehow 40 games this year rather than be in the first team squad and play four. It could be that. Anyway, in terms of so we've got that middle of the pitch. We've got Negrin, McGregor, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Sorensen, Bauer, Vandenberg. That's six for three positions. For me,
McCown.
Domestically, it's fine. There's seven, right? For somewhere in the middle of the park. Right back, you've got Donovan. You've got Latomba, and then in 5 weeks' time, you've got Alistair Johnson. Left back, you've got, now I didn't realise Latomba.
You missed out Ralston.
You've got Ralston as well. I actually think Ralston should have gone out on loan, but we've got him in a European squad.
He should go somewhere.
We need eight players in the Scottish players in the European squad. So I think that's why. And then on the left-hand side, we've got Tierney, Latomba can play. I didn't realise this. He can play
left back.
And then you've got the Chelsea boy.
Emenalo.
And then centre-half. There are four centre-halves, whatever you think of the issues. And this is one of the dilemmas I always think of Celtic. How good do you think the fourth choice centre-half's ever going to be at Celtic? We do have to, I mean, you and I, growing up, you know, we didn't have four centre-halves.
You'd Roy Aitken.
You'd Roy Aitken and Tom McAdam. And that was it.
Roddy McDonald.
We had big Roddy, yeah.
You know, Mike Conroy plays centre-half in the 1980 Scottish Cup final, you know?
No.
Liverpool went through a season with 14 players winning the league, didn't they? Like, famously, I think, in the 70s.
So, in all of those, there is an element, I think, of logic in what we brought in and who we brought and what we've got where. Do you know the only one that doesn't make sense to me is the goalkeeping situation? Unless you are 60-40, that you think Sinisalo's going to make it, but you've just got a bit of doubt, and so you want an experienced backup just in case. Unless you're at that position, the goalkeeping one's the one, the goalkeeper on loan situation's the one that I don't quite get that backup.
Yeah. Okay.
Sinisalo's a young goalkeeper, you've got to remember that.
Mm.
He's young. What age is he? 25? That's young for a goalkeeper.
He's not Liverpool finished.
Was it Liverpool just spent £30 million on an 18-year-old goalkeeper? Was it Chelsea?
Yeah, right. They've loaned him. Yeah, I saw that.
What happens in
He doesn't even look 18, he looks about 12.
Right.
These footballers just mental. Something wrong with it. It's going to blow, hopefully.
Anyway, yeah. the general gist of it is, I actually think when you sit down and analyse the squad, and I know I read someone online saying, we are only, and then listed about six players, and said, we are only an injury for this person, this person, this person, this person, this person, this person, and this person from a disaster. Well, isn't every football club on the planet only six?
Exactly.
If they get that many injuries.
You can only cover so many eventualities. I would have liked another second half, to be honest. And not because...
So my brother, yeah. He agrees with you.
I just think Carter Vickers is not, you can't rely on him for the full season. Even in Angie's seasons, Carter Vickers missed a lot of big games. You know, he missed Champions League games, you know, so he never played like the six games in the Champions League groups, I don't think ever. Whereas Starfelt was always there. Starfelt was never injured, although some folk wished he was. I think Starfelt was very underrated. Yeah.
If you remember, I remember Brendan making a slightly barbed comment about how many big Champions League games Carter Vickers missed.
Yeah.
He did. You know what Brendan used to say?
There was something,
You can be the greatest player in the world. You got to be available. He used to go on about that. You got to be available. But you know Brendan's idea? When he came in, the Brodge, he said, I want my squad to be no more than 25 players because you want every player to be franchised, every player to feel they have a pathway. And do you know one of the last things Dyla said? He said, you know what I got wrong here? He said, because if you remember how badly Celtic fizzled in that last 6 months, he said, people were so unhappy because we had so many players, people weren't getting a look in, and it creates a bad atmosphere around the training ground. And he said, it really seeped in for us. So he said, I got it wrong with the stockpiling of players. You know who was a classic stockpiler of players, mind you, in the early 2000s? A certain Martin O'Neill, wasn't he? You couldn't let a player go. It was like, you know, it was like an old pair of shoes. I'm sitting here with my Docks, right? I bought for Glastonbury in 97. Martin was like that with footballers. He allowed Tom Boy to stay. Lambert a new contract, to go and live in Germany for the week to get his coaching badges.
So anyway, back to you, Stephen. That's my way of looking at it. Look at each position. What are the options? Does it make sense that we've got the way we've laid out the options? And I know there's a lot of it all happened at the last minute, but sometimes, you know, Sorensen, for example, as I understand it, wasn't available. Suddenly became available in the last week of the window. We jumped in and took him. I'm not defending doing late stuff. I'm just saying there can be occasions where a player becomes available late in the window. Like Craig Bellamy when we got him or whatever.
Yeah. I don't think the late stuff
Who was the manager then?
I don't think the late stuff is a bad thing necessarily, but the late stuff should almost be to kind of supplement and tweak. And, it's like maybe the icing on the cake or the cherry on the icing. I still think, and I know we can regurgitate all day about last Tuesday, I still don't think we were as prepared as we could be. And you can say, yeah, the players, the managers should have seen that out. Absolutely. But at 4-0, it wasn't a 4-0 game. You know, we get out of Park. I don't know how we get out of Parkhead at 3-0. Because that was a 1-0 or a 3-2 game. You know, they were well worth a couple. And the worrying thing for me after that we didn't see that. You know, that was what concerned me. And that's on the coaching staff more than anything. You know, the senior players that we didn't see the danger. It's funny, we talked earlier about all the teams that's knocked us out and they've all went in and they've either been shit in the Champions League or they've not even made the Champions League. I actually think last, although I don't think they got a brilliant draw, I think they might surprise a few people because they're quite a good team. They've got a very good coach and they've got some good players. So they're a bit like, you know, USG went in last year and they got 9 points, they didn't get through the group. Bodo went through the group until the last game when they beat Man City late on and they beat, I think they had to win the last three games to go through, and they did. Last might take some points, so they might have a big surprise result. And I kind of hope they do. It was like, you know, when Basel beat us that year, 2000, they were a bloody good side. You know, they put Liverpool out. They ran Man United close in the next, it wasn't at the two group stages. So they had the first group they came through, they knocked out Liverpool, and then they were in a group with Man U and Juventus, and I think the only one out on goal difference to Juventus. They were a very good side. I think we underestimated them then. And ironically, I think Martin underestimated them last week as well. Definitely. For me. That's a big part of that is on him. Because he looked bewildered at the end.
He did. Effectively, you went there playing four forwards, and you know, Stephen, I didn't want to play that way.
He should have changed the formation. And they did. They brought a guy in and stuck him in the middle of the pitch. I'd have signed him, actually. He was Winston Bogard's nephew. Remember Winston Bogard?
Yeah, that's right,
Picked up all the money at Chelsea for doing nothing. That's his nephew, was the big centre midfielder.
And they were talking about that Winston Bogart in the radio, and it was saying that after they bombed him and he just wouldn't leave, and he said he lived in Amsterdam and he flew over every morning for training, for as much as he was in training. He didn't even bother living in the country anymore because he was on something astronomical for doing nothing. Boy's obsessed by that stuff about how goalkeepers, like you get, even like a Celtic goalkeeper might get paid 3 or 4 grand a week and never play.
Yeah, Doohan's probably on 5 grand a week.
Yeah, he's obsessed. My boy's obsessed by that.
I said to someone who's no longer in the coaching staff, but was in the coaching staff, I was talking about Bain, and I was saying, Bain, why doesn't he should have left Celtic a bit earlier, and he could have, maybe if he'd left maybe a wee bit earlier, he could have gone to Scotland squad and gone abroad. And this person said to me, right, okay, so you're on 5 grand a week, you come in and train with your mates, and you get to play football and have a bit of kick about at football, Monday to Friday, earning 5 grand a week, have a great laugh with your mates, and you never, ever, ever have the pressure of actually being the guy who has to do something. Would you give that up to go and play for somebody else for half the money?
Yeah.
But be under pressure.
All the shit that goes with it,
And you probably think,
that, Chelsea and Manchester City are filling their squad with players. You know, and the number of players that have went there and just their careers die. You know, you look at Jack Grealish, for instance, he's back at Everton now, isn't he? But players go there, but they're picking, and it's not 5 grand a week, it's 50 grand a week, 100 grand a week. It's like, 50. What was Fraser Forster getting sitting on the bench? Why would you not do that? It's a short life.
John McGinn, John McGinn spoke about that in that podcast last week. I don't know if any of you's watched it. when he was talking about when he was at St Mirren, he was on 90 quid a week, and then his digs was 60 quid a week, so yeah, he only 30 quid a week left. And he said, the money was a driver, because I didn't have the money. He said, I've got to get better and make more money in this game. He said, but young players, that's not what they're thinking. I've got to make more money. I'm already on, like a young guy, I'm already on 8 grand a week or something.
So if I go, Andrew, through the squad that we put in for Europe, and it's a really interesting thing because I've read online with people misunderstanding the rules, as I keep getting back to it. Yeah. Effectively, we've got space for 17 foreigners. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, because people are talking about the Chelsea guys, but to be on, and maybe they can play because they're on the B list, but to be on the B list, you need to be born on or after the 1st of January 2005 and have been eligible to play for Celtic for an uninterrupted 2-year period since his 15th birthday. So, ironically, Christopher Ayer, well, he wouldn't be on a B, but in terms of a homegrown player, Christopher Ayer would class as a homegrown player. You know, if we re-signed Christopher Ayer,
at that time,
he would class as a homegrown player.
Because we had him for a period.
To be homegrown, a player needs to have played for Celtic or another Scottish club for 3 years between the ages of 15 and 21.
Well, would the Edward, would he have fitted as well? Or son Edward?
If he would, so it's three. So basically, we need to sign someone 19, at 18 or younger.
Yeah.
All right, wasn't he?
He was brought higher at 18.
So, Van de Beek. So this is the...
Yeah.
This is the other problem. If we, you know, after signing Sorensen, if we'd signed another midfielder, which I think, for me, if we'd have just signed one more midfielder, a defensive midfielder...
A CDM, as the kids say.
That would have been a perfect window. The issue, though, is one of our current 17 foreigners would have had to miss out. So the squad is Sinisalo, Johnson, Latomba, Scales, Trusty, Negrin, Hu, Duran, Yang, McCowan, Tineke, Sorensen, Osmond, Carter Vickers, Chamberlain, Bauer, Hassan, Johnson, Doohan, McGregor, Murray, Forrest, Donovan, Ralston, and Tierney. So from that list, I've heard people say, I'd take out McCowan.
My boy was saying that, and I said, son, it doesn't make any difference.
We'd have had 20 McCowan out. The only one that I could
Some
see...
Some people would still have taken McCowan out and Ralston. That's all right.
I mean, Donovan qualifies for the B squad, so I'm guessing that the only reason Donovan's in the A squad is to prevent us having a 24-man squad like we did last season.
Yeah.
Because Donovan doesn't need to be listed in the A squad.
Yeah.
Osmond is the only player that I can see who's not Scottish that if we'd have signed one more player, you could have taken Osmond out. But there, Martin has decided, I mean, Vandenberg is a midfielder. He's come in and he's kept Osmond in and not played Vandenberg.
Yes.
We can still make a change, can't we? We could take out, because we've done that last year, didn't we? When Carter Vickers was injured, we brought Osmond in and then he got injured after bloody half an hour or something. He was the replacement,
I think there's two.
Yeah.
I think there's two injured players, a maximum of two injured players you can take out and put somebody else in.
Yeah. Because what I was explaining it to my boy, and I said, the reality is, and a lot of people, I don't know if maybe Ross has even said on here, maybe he wouldn't because of, but it's kind of unfair because a country like Scotland, you're selecting from a pool of 5 million. You go to Germany, 70 million. England, 70 million. France, 70 million. It's a wee bit of the FSR rules in the sense of it keeps the small. You could say in one way.
Chris Mackay presented to UEFA on behalf of Celtic about a year, 18 months ago, maybe a year ago, a presentation on that very point about how we've got a population in Scotland of 5.5 million, yet 8 out of 25 players in our squad have got to be Scottish, and Germany, and he went, you know, Germany has a population of 70 million, and 8 out of their 25 has got to be German. And the disadvantages, but not only that, then the other big countries.
England are stealing our players because of Brexit. You know, so because they can get our players before 18. So, but we can't, you know, so in theory, if we had Callum Osmond as home registered, if we had another young English player as home registered, but you can't obviously because it's Scotland, it's not the UK. So it's not a UK passport holder. But that's why we're losing players to academies in England, isn't it? And whether those players would ultimately, you know, of the ones that's left so far, it's probably Gannon Doak, who is the wee guy who went to West Ham, the striker, Cummins, Daniel Cummins. Would he be in and around the squad?
Daniel Cummins,
would, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I don't think he would be that far away, because he's probably got a similar profile to what Callum Osmond has. You know, but we've stolen Osmond out of their squad, and you know someone else has taken one of ours. But it's definitely weighted against, or more for, the Germans, the French, the Spanish, the English.
Yeah, I mean,
it's easy for them to do it, isn't it?
They should, you know. So I'm not necessarily for this, bizarrely, in a European context, but see, in a domestic context, then it's a level playing field. See, if you introduce that, you have to have 7 of your 25-man squad, you need to name a 25-man squad, and you need to have 8 of them be Scottish at the start of the season, and you have to play for them any given, or 3 of them any given week. This is maybe what Mulholland's going to come out with, something of this nature. He's making a big presentation, isn't he? I can see Celtic would fight tooth and nail against that and would probably stop it happening, Celtic and Rangers, but I can see that it would benefit the game. I think there should be something of that nature. Because there's far... Dundee United aren't playing any Scottish players right now.
It's not just us. I saw it last week.
Hardly a single.
To somebody.
And what's ball in the ranks?
It was Belgian football. Somebody was talking about Belgian football, and they've got a rule in Belgium that there needs to be so many matchday squads, so many play. And then I looked last weekend, so USG had less Belgian players in their squad and on the pitch than we had Scottish players on the pitch. You know, so we finished, we had 3 Tierney, Forrest, whatever we had, Tierney, Donovan and McGregor on the pitch. And then we brought on other Scottish players as well. So actually, we'd have been okay with that rule at the moment. It's as you touched on, Brian, is when, you know, Forrest and McGregor aren't going to be there forever. So, you know, in a season or 2 seasons time, those 2 are,
yep.
So suddenly you're 86. So how do you get that up to 8 again? You either go out and buy them, so that's your Lennon Millers, your Kieran Bowies, your whoever. You know, that's where if we are buying a Scottish player, we should be buying Josh Mulligan instead of Luke McCowan, because one's 6 foot and one's 5'9". And actually, if you can coach them and they've got similar technical abilities, I think you're better off having the bigger guy. You know, that for me, he would have offered more than McCowan. McCowan's probably, when the 2 of them were at Dundee, was the better player. But for the profile we needed, I think Mulligan was the better player. But, you know, that's another argument, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
And it's something that we've really got to focus on, as you say, Stephen. I've been going on it for a wee while now. McGregor and Forrester, there's a year or 2 left in them, and that causes us a problem in the domestic. We're not going to, if we fix the academy tomorrow, we're not suddenly going to have 4 academy players in our team next season, right? So regardless, it then means the closer we get to the point of not replacing McGregor and Forrest until we have to, the closer we get to the point of being held to ransom, because suddenly we shop around and realise we're going to have a 20-man European squad unless we go out and buy 3-4 Scottish players here. And the selling clubs will know that, and we'll drive the price up. Obviously, what you're looking at is McCardo and Liam Kennedy have been around the first team squad quite a bit. So this season, they both went to LASK, and Kennedy was on the bench. And I know Ross rates him. Kennedy was on the bench against Falkirk. And it is that thing of, we're just going to have to find a way of grit our teeth and getting him in the team. But was there not a thing, Andrew, at the beginning of the SPL came out, that you had to have so many under 21 players
under
on the
21s.
Bench? And they scrapped it because what was happening was your better under 21 players were sitting on the bench, not getting a game, not getting any game time anywhere, because they were just a token
existence on the bench for the sake of it.
So it was stunting. It was stunting development because you were never going to put them on. Yeah, you were never going to put them on, but they were still your best ones that you would have closer and the closer proximity to the senior team than you didn't want anybody else in case you had to, in case there was emergencies and you had to put one of these guys on. So they still had to be the best players. But being the best players and you never really used them, then it just stunted their growth.
Yeah, so it is a dilemma. I mean, for me, no, I keep getting back to every top flight team who wants it should be allowed a B team who can get promoted all the way up Scottish football right up into the second tier.
But other
countries who are
our
size, who do better than us, that's what they do.
I mean, the second tier, where the man's come from, Vandenberg, essentially, that's where he's been playing for. He is like the young, their second team, their B team. That's half of the teams in that set up are B teams.
Well, Salzburg have
So we've gone through that. We've got the St Mirren game. I was going to go through the St Mirren game on Saturday night at whatever time it is. 8 o'clock, is it? The St Mirren game?
It's at a
top of the table clash.
The top two.
Yeah.
I thought your man McLeish was going to make it. I mean, my friend's a St Mirren season book holder and he had his head in his hands when they gave him that job. And this guy, he must have something. And it's so weird to hear a Scottish coach, like, you know, a young Scottish coach being promoted and actually sounding as if he knows what he's talking about. And they're all delighted now that they don't have to watch, like, Stephen Robinson football because they've got a guy who's trying to play.
I think I said before, the great quote somebody gave me the weekend is that Stephen Robinson's turning Aberdeen into a shite St Mirren. So, what's your expectation, Andrew, for Saturday? There's goals in them there games.
I wonder if he'll be tempted to. I mean, Maloney was talking about how desperate he was for who and Kieran Tierney to be back for that game, but will it be too tight? But then, if they're no back for that game, and then you think you've got the St Johnstone game, I take it is that next Wednesday? St Johnstone
next Wednesday, 8 o'clock,
and then you're at Ibrox. So how does he play? How does he play these three games? Well, the two games leading up to the Rangers game, because he clearly, if you've got a squad, the people within it have to be able to come on and make an impact. But they can't just be expected to come from nowhere and make an impact. So how many of these players can he net in? This is the problem with what Stephen talked about. This should have been happening 6 weeks ago. And I know you can't, right, with the exception of maybe two or three that you've got to this week, and there's two or three players that you've managed to pick up that you didn't expect in the closing hours of a window. But no, what we're talking about is six players. You're trying
how
to
long is it until those six weave into players the team are up to speed? You know, that's the challenge. Okay, we got a couple of them on the pitch last night. You know, that was good. But, you know, how long will it take? You know, so although you've got that squad now, ideally, I don't know if any of them have even been playing football. I mean, Alo's, he's injured, isn't he? The left back, so he's injured. The Feyenoord guy, I don't know if he's been involved.
He's injured, so.
Yeah, you want to try and see these guys involved at some time against Simpson and St Mirren rather than against. I don't think he'll make that many changes before the two Rangers games. And they're a bit of a marker, aren't they? And it's a weird one because I think if we didn't have the League Cup game, the first derby was at Celtic Park. But the League Cup game skews it a little bit because, you know, who's the favourites for that? Probably still us. But, you know, they'll fancy their chances with Celtic's allocation of four people on the bench or whatever we've got. So that skews it a little bit. So that will set it. But then if we come out of those two games having not lost, so knock them out of the cup, and even if you knock them out of the cup and have a draw at Celtic Park, we're unbeaten. It damages them. So I don't see him changing the team that much between now and then, unless he has to. I think he just Yang might be Yang away from the Rangers game.
We might well see Wednesday night's
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Yang is away, isn't he?
Apparently, isn't he? Does he go in 11th to the Asian Games?
Yeah. I think he misses the Rangers game. They're talking, the
he might be captain. He might captain.
Yeah.
So who do you play in Yang's position then?
Or do you tweak the formation?
You play Tineke.
You would need, I suppose.
Or you could play Forrest. You could play Forrest on the left.
Yeah.
Forrest and Tineke is a job share, isn't
terrible. Actually,
was
all right when he come on. But I mean, you're 3-0 up against a rotten Aberdeen team. So Martin Hill always says, it's easy to look good when your team's winning out of sight.
So what's your team going to be against them, and what's the score?
Well, I think is Tierney coming back? Is Tierney coming back?
Tierney and who are supposed to be back for the game?
If Tierney's back, then you Tierney for Scales. You might even think about, we're talking about no flogging players. Maybe you play Scales instead, and Cameron Carter-Vickers. You think you can't play every Wednesday or midweek. Midweek weekend, that's like Cameron Carter-Vickers will break down. That's when you have to use your centre backs. So I would probably, I would be so reluctant if who's fit, I would be so reluctant to stick Duran out in the wing again. I just think who has to be midfield. I really want to see the Ox keep getting his fitness up. So that would be my two, and as I say, those two playing is the kind of 4-2-3-1, and then I would be tempted to. I mean, do you know something? I would be tempted. I know Negrin scored again last night and all that, but I'd be tempted to let see somebody else in the Negrin position. But it's not going to happen, is it?
So would I.
We know that. You've not really hidden that.
I have to say, right? So I think he's played better this season, but I was watching it. I was watching the Falkirk game, right? And I was watching our shape, and actually when Falkirk when they were playing out from the back with their goalkeeper, initially we set up in almost like a 4-3-3, and then that changes a wee bit as they come up the pitch. And I was looking at the 4-3-3, and I was noticing that that Negrin goes on the right, and that the winger, our right winger, drops down to being part of the midfield, right? I was thinking, that's interesting that we do that. So in the second half, I decide to watch Negrin, right, in his attempts to close people down, because he's right underneath me at that point, because I'm in the north stand. So I'm watching him. And one of the really interesting things that I found I really noticed about this is, if you listen to the Huddle Breakdown or Ross or whatever, and the people who like Negrin, If you hear them talking about him, they'll talk about how he picks up these lovely pockets, and when there's a transition and Celtic pick it up, he just floats in from the right hand side and comes in and gets the ball and moves into the attack. And I'm thinking, yeah. I can see why he does that. Because I was watching him. He's closing down. He jogs towards the guy. And then the guy just plays him out, and it reminds me of me playing football. I've got no pace, so I'm always like just chasing the ball. And because when we play teams domestically, they give up possession.
He's still
in this up front position because he's never really properly clocked down. And the ball comes back and then there's turnover. And it comes back in. And so this comment that you see the stats guys coming out of, he just floats in off this right-hand side. I can see how he floats in off this right-hand side. It's because he's still up there from the press that he didn't really press about, and he's just there. So, yes, I would like to see somebody else.
By the way, Hassan is his kissing cousin. Like, Hassan, I watched him last night, and it was like tracking back. It doesn't exist, you know, like closing men down. Hassan is going to be a kind of luxury player. That's what I mean. It's wrong to call Negrin a luxury player, but I still think you shouldn't, you know, somebody who doesn't have any kind of defensive instinct. I don't think Celtic can afford to have a two-man midfield.
That was my issue with, he's, you know, people say, oh, his goals, which I will forgive
Like, if who does nothing but score goals, for example, well, you can forgive that because he's a striker and we've got other players to make up the rest of the team. My issue with Negrin was always, yeah, but he's a midfielder. And the whole point of us playing three in the middle of the pitch, I know you're saying about 4-2-3-1 sort of system, but the whole point of that is that guy's got to be heavily involved in defensive duties as well as popping up to score a goal. So that's my issue. Anyway, what's the score going to be, Andrew? And then I'll move on to Stephen for his team and score.
I don't think it'll be that necessarily that comfortable or that easy, but I still think 3-1. I'll go for 3-1 Celtic. Because there's goals in that darn team.
Stephen, your team and your goals and your score even.
I'd go with the same 11.
His Wi-Fi keeps coming and going.
I don't know if he'll change it. He'll keep.
He's heard me doing my so prospector like one time too
I think
many.
We'll win 2-0.
So yes.
My thing is buffering or struggling
like 30
or
seconds
what's
or
your,
so.
Well, you tell us your
again.
Right, well, like you, I think he's got to find a way to give some of these players who've just arrived more game time playing with their teammates. You know, he can spend today and tomorrow both on the training pitch and in the lecture theatre explaining the setup and how the team plays. I think if we are looking at Latomba as being someone who can play right back and fill in for Kieran Tierney, then he's got to get game time for me. Because Scales might not be the greatest player in the world, but it's not Scales' fault that he's never a left back. You know, that's not his fault. So we've got to get Latomba. So I'd like to see him get game time, particularly if Emenalo, whatever his name is, the Chelsea player's not quite fit. And then I'd like to see Sorensen played a bit. I'd like to see him get some more game time.
But then if you're doing that, then Bauer doesn't get time. Or, like, you bring Bauer on for, I suppose he'll probably be on for Oxlade-Chamberlain or McGregor. They still seem reluctant to give McGregor any kind of timeouts, which, as Stephen says, that's like, I don't understand that. That's no good player management. That's no good management.
McGregor's had his rest for the season. That's it now.
Yeah,
we're going to run him into the ground until we break him.
Yeah.
So what's your team's, Stephen, and score? I'm just conscious of your Wi-Fi coming and going.
Yeah, I just said my team and in the two you froze and I thought, I didn't think it was that exciting that they've just stopped. So I reckon he'll go with the same team. If I was going to change it, I'd maybe bring in Sorensen for Negrin and just maybe put something else in the middle of the pitch. I think we'll win 2-0. I think it'll be a hard enough game. We had a couple of hard games against them last year. You know, but I think we've got more goals in us this year than we had last year, I think. There was an interesting article about St Mirren. I'll flip it onto you. I'll stick it on the chat. It was about with Keith Lasley and what they're doing with their plan and their strategy. I think that's all we need to do. You know, we were talking about the transfers and the thing. You know, Mark used to often be on the pod. Mark is now this kind of imaginary person and you know, nobody knows who he is. I think Celtic are wasting an opportunity there because you could have an interview with Mark, you know, a fluff piece on the website talking about the window and what we tried to do.
He's boring as hell. You're on his feet to Mark.
I used to really enjoy listening to him in the pod because he always thought well. He had a bit of a story about South America. You know, I always thought he was good. He came across as a proper Celtic fan and I think Celtic missed a trick. You've got someone and actually... You see lots of snidey things out there about Mark that I think if people actually saw what he does, that would be a positive, personally, you know, but...
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah. They're so fearful. They're so fearful of anybody saying anything.
It's all about communication. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're all going for a Celtic victory, so that's all that matters. And then our title challenges are going to be Motherwell this season.
I've already backed Motherwell to finish best of the rest. Now, I didn't think that would be ahead of Rangers as well, but like...
Did you see that goal? Did you see one the other goal? Lowry goal for you? I mean, it's terrific watching a Scottish team play like that.
Well,
really well coached side.
Yeah. I see Hibs fans. Hibs are doing their usual. As we record this, it's Hearts 2, Hibs 0. Well, it's Hibs 0, Hearts 2 is actually the better way to put the score. So.
I don't think Hearts will be far away this season, actually. I think they'll be I think Rangers have all get it together.
Somehow they'll get it together.
They've got a good coach, but Rangers are throwing everything at it.
They are.
They're just going, they're going mental.
Somebody needs to tell Stuttgart that there is as much chance of me winning the lottery tomorrow as there is of Rangers ponying up 18 million for the winger that they've got on loan with an option to buy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Option to buy at 18 million.
Yeah.
Jesus wept.
Yeah.
How did he do it? I don't understand. You know.
There's an option on me dating Beyonce, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's enough for us. I will say, Stephen and Andrew, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground, rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.